from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today we'll look at how the election unfolded here in Wisconsin. Former President Donald Trump won this swing state by a few thousand votes. The race for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin also came down to a thin margin, with incumbent Democrat Tammy Baldwin declaring victory.
I think she represents Wisconsin more than the other person. Her experience, I think, shows well. Like, her experience has been progressive, has been thoughtful, and she's someone fitting of the position.
Plus, we'll hear from voters about what brought them to Milwaukee area polls yesterday.
Just the commercials I see, and on them commercials and interviews I see, either one of them really talk about policies. I'm more so voting with my heart and what I think who's going to do better and who's going to do worse.
Our post-election Lake Effect is coming up next. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. It was an exciting evening here in Wisconsin that stretched well into the morning. Former President Donald Trump won the election here in Wisconsin by a narrow margin, as did Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin. But there were many other races on the ballot as well that took center stage last night in Wisconsin. Here to unpack what's happened so far, we have J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com and a regular WUWM contributor. JR, thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
Anytime.
So let's start here. Give us the play-by-play of what happened with the presidential election yesterday evening and this morning.
Well, essentially, we saw the red wave build. Then the blue wave came, but it wasn't enough to overcome the margins that Trump built up in a lot of rural areas. I mean, I'm still a little bleary-eyed right now, but I'm going county by county, and it looks like Donald Trump improved his percentage performance in like 67 of Wisconsin's 72 counties. You know, there are a number of reasons for that. If you take a step back and, you know, there's so much data and conflicting pointers or indicators going into Tuesday, but reality is people are unhappy with the direction of the country and they're unhappy with the economy. When that happens, the party in power usually is punished. And that's kind of what happened last night. So looking at kind of how things came in, Trump built up a big lead. We're waiting for, you know, Milwaukee Central Count to come in, Green Bay's, Kenosha's, Wauwatosa's. Those came in, that blue kind of wave that we see, the blueification of the results, I call it. As those things came in, you know, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and it wasn't enough. Trump's up by, I don't know, about 30,000 votes right now. There's still, you know, some returns out, some precincts out here and there, but it looks like it was definitely a move toward him. And, you know, people are going to debate what drove that, but at the core of it, it's almost always the economy. That's a driving factor in almost every election that I've covered.
Mm. Now, we're going to sidestep the U.S. Senate race for the moment, although we can say at this time that it seems Senator Baldwin has won by a narrow margin. But I'd like to switch to the Wisconsin Senate and Assembly. There were a number of races to watch in the Wisconsin legislature, and I'd like to start with just the big picture. How is the makeup of the legislature going to change as a result of last night's election?
The margins are more narrow for Republicans in both houses. They maintain control of the assembly, which they kind of were favored to do going into Tuesday. But Democrats had a good night in the Senate. Looking at the state Senate, even with the new maps, there were not enough seats in play on Tuesday to flip control. The key for Democrats was, could they net at least 3 seats to take that Republican majority of 22 to 11 down to 19? Because in 2026, there are 3 seats on the ballot that are kind of up for grabs. Well, they netted 4. So they've widened their path in 2026 to winning back control of the Senate. So that's a big deal for them. In the Assembly, it was a pretty decent night for Republicans. They maintained control. Now, there are like a handful, 3-4 seats that haven't been called yet. But it looks like, and I stress looks like, as we talk right now, that Republicans are going to have 53, 54 seats. That's key because Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, has got several members who are not, let's say, cooperative with what Robin wants to do at times. And so if Robin had end up Republicans came out of this with like a 51 seat majority, there'd be a real question about whether he could get those three, four members to vote for him as speaker. It could be a problem for him. It'd be like basically watching the House of Representatives in DC, right? A dysfunctional leadership structure where holdout members sink things constantly. So they look like, and I stress, look like at this very moment, like they're in decent shape to have a functioning majority in the assembly for now.
Mm. Looks like is a key term in a lot of the coverage at the moment. I'd like to look at a couple of the competitive assembly races here in the Milwaukee area. What did we see happen in District 21? That was incumbent Republican Jesse Rodriguez versus Democratic challenger David Marsteller.
Well, that's one that I stress the looks like, because I've been, as I was going through results about 4:30, 5 o'clock this morning, one last time, I went, oh, wait a second. The Associated Press had called that race for Jesse Rodriguez, but her lead is down to 18 votes with 97% of precincts in. So I don't know what's not counted yet. We're going to have a canvas. There's all kinds of steps before it's, you know, certified. But we are well within recount territory in that seat as of right now, right? Like there's still some left out. Now, one thing about recounts, remember, even at a very narrow margin, for the most part, a recount, you just feed the ballots back to the machine. They don't change things dramatically unless you find ballots that weren't counted because, you know, like in Madison, we vote a lot of times with that. You draw a line across the name and you'll fill in the bar. Some places have the oval you fill in. Let's say the oval fill-in ballots, you see somebody who puts the check mark next to the oval, not like fill in the oval. Well, the machine won't read that sometimes. So can you discern the voter's intent from that kind of a ballot? So my point is, even if there's a recount in these races, it may not change things because there's not a big swing that we see typically whenever there is a recount.
Sure. Another one in our area that we've been watching is District 61. That was actually a rematch between incumbent Republican Bob Donovan and Democratic challenger Luann Byrd.
Yeah, and Donovan won again, beat Byrd 2 years ago in a less Republican seat. That's still a swing seat, but the one 2 years ago, a little more Democratic on those old maps. So it looked like going into Tuesday that he would have an advantage in that kind of a rematch, unless there was a real collapse for Donald Trump in the suburbs. And there definitely was in like Waukesha and Ozaukee counties. We saw more erosion for Donald Trump in those suburban areas, but not so much in this kind of southwest side of Milwaukee. In those suburbs, it looks like either Donovan outperformed Trump, because I haven't seen like the breakdown of the presidential race by assembly district yet, but either he outperformed Trump or Trump did okay, at least in that district, and it collapsed there.
Now, looking at the Wisconsin Senate, of course, only half the seats were up this election, but there was a close one that we were watching right here in the Milwaukee area, Senate District 8. That paired incumbent Republican Dewey Strobel and Democratic challenger Jody Habish-Sinikin. How did things shake out there?
Habish-Sinikin declared victory kind of early this morning. She's up by not quite 2,000 votes with 98% in. Like, this race is fascinating because Dewey Strobel is known as a pretty conservative guy in the state Senate. The district would be drawn to be a swing seat, so you had a guy who's much more conservative than the district itself. Also, the spending. Through last week, I attracted about $10.2 million pumped into that seat alone. Now, the most expensive legislative race in Wisconsin history had been back in the recall elections in, like, I think 2011 or 12, and it was like less than $10 million. So here you have a different situation, a quote-unquote normal race that cost more than $10 million. Jody Habish-Sinikin, from what I tracked, spent $5 million roughly on TV. That is a healthy budget for a congressional campaign. The amount of spending in the seat was mind-blowing, but it also underscores that these new maps were put in place after the Supreme Court threw out the old ones, that they created an opportunity for Democrats, and the money rushed in both to try to take advantage of those new lines for Democrats and to defend those Republican seats on the GOP side.
Now, Wisconsinites also voted on a constitutional amendment in this election. What did we see there?
Oh, it passed overwhelmingly, like 70% of the vote. That was one. We had some amendments or two on the ballot in August. We saw an organized effort by Democrats to spend money to defeat it. They organized it, ran ads. They did a really good job of kind of rallying against it. We didn't see much effort on this one. And part of the reason is it would have been an uphill battle to defeat it. I mean, typically, in talking to people about stuff like this, they point out to you, if it seems like voters go, oh, that's common sense, they're going to support it. It seems like common sense for most voters that, okay, we already bar under state law people aren't citizens from voting. Why not put in the Constitution? So there wasn't really an effort to spend money there or to defeat it. And so it really, there wasn't much p attention to it. And you walk in the ballot booth and go, oh, well, that makes sense. And you're going to vote yes most of the time.
Sure. But what is the likely impact of this constitutional amendment? I think that was a little less clear.
Yeah, good question, because it's already illegal to vote in an election in Wisconsin if you're not a citizen. Now, this makes sure that if you are a municipality, you can't allow non-citizens to vote in like a school board election. So we've seen this in some places like out east and out west where they've allowed non-citizens to vote in those races. I have not seen that in Wisconsin anywhere. I'm not sure anybody even proposed that, but it just shuts off that avenue that there's not going to be an opportunity even for a community to say, okay, even if you're not here legally, you can vote in the school board race.
So maybe something a bit preemptive, a little bit like the plastic bag ban, or the ban on plastic bag bans, I should say. Turning to the U.S. House of Representatives, let's look at the big picture. Did we see any changes here in Wisconsin? And what do we know so far about the partisan breakdown at the national level?
I have not looked at the national level so far. I've been trying to keep my head above water, the state stuff. But looking at like California and how it counts its votes, it's going to take a while to figure that out. So I'm not quite sure where we're at. I just know with the Wisconsin delegation, nothing really changed. We didn't see in the first congressional district, kind of southeastern Wisconsin, kind of more south of Milwaukee, going over west to Janesville and Beloit. National Democrats kind of pulled out of that race the last couple of weeks. That was a sign. They thought Ryan Stahl was in good shape, and it turns out he was. He won handily last night, 54% of the vote. Looking at Stahl, he's won in a position of leadership in the House right now. Republicans maintain the majority. He's in a position to move up possibly or have a interesting career there. Two, Democrats have talked about trying to take some sheen off of Stahl because they think he might run statewide someday. They didn't do that in the election yesterday. He continues to outperform a lot of ways atop the ticket. Over in Western Wisconsin, the third congressional district, Derek Van Orden, the Republican freshman, he was 2 years ago, Democrats made a run at that seat, but pulled out kind of at the end and didn't really spend against him. And he won narrowly. Well, they gave it a full effort in this fall and still lost. He got about 51.4% of the vote. Now the question becomes, what do you do in 2026? I know it's early to talk about 2 years from now. People don't want to think about it, but the party in power in the White House traditionally does not do a midterm election. Democrats avoided that a little bit in 2022, in part because of the Dobbs decision and what that inspired among their base and with people who care about abortion rights. But if past is prologue, 2018 wasn't a great year for Republicans nationally. Trump inspires a lot of people to come out, but only for him. So in 2026, in a district that leans a little Republican, do you take a shot at him again? Because if you don't get him at this point, he can become kind of entrenched. You need either a new map or him decide he's done before he leaves. So I'll be interested to watch how they approach that district in 2026. Not right now, like they won't do it right now, but another 6 to 6 months to a year, they gotta figure out what they want to do out there in the third district for Democrats.
Yeah. Now, in some ways, it feels like the end of the election. In other ways, it feels like it's just the beginning. What are your expectations for the coming weeks?
So, Democrats are obviously dispirited. That's obvious, understandable. It kind of feels like 2016, if you look on social media and how some people are reacting. The question is, how long does that funk last? And is the euphoria for Republicans carry over into the spring? Remember, We have a, I hate to say it, but in 21 weeks, we have a state Supreme Court race that will decide the control of Wisconsin Supreme Court. Liberals flipped that court in 2023 with Janet Prosewicz joining. Now you have the retirement of Ann Walsh Bradley. She's a liberal. We have Dane County Judge who's in Crawford running as kind of the progressive candidate. We have Republican, former Republican Attorney General Brad Schimmel, who's also now a Waukesha County Judge as the conservative candidate. So it's going to be for all the marbles again. And think about what the Supreme Court has done in the last year, less than a year, that the liberals have control. The new maps that we have, our decisions on ballot drop boxes. I mean, the whole nine yards, that's at stake again. I tracked last year $56 million in spending. That Supreme Court race is probably a little bit light compared to what's spent overall, because there's some stuff I can't track, like issue ads, they call them. We could see another Supreme Court race just as expensive, if not more. And the question is going to be, do Wisconsin voters answer the bell once again? It has been amazing to see, doing this for almost 25 years, how often Wisconsin voters answer the bell to turn out in elections. We had 3.3 million votes cast in 2020 in a pandemic. We had, let me do some quick math here. I'm at least, at least that in the presidential race with some stuff still out. We had almost record turnout in the Supreme Court race in 23 without a presidential primary on the ballot. We keep turning out in Wisconsin. We seem to kind of enjoy going to the voting booth. We might hate the ads, but we keep getting inspired to go cast our ballots. I've wondered this for years. Is at some point, are we going to say, okay, that's enough. I got to sit this one out. I'll be interested to see if this spring, if that kind of happens, or if we're going to see another, you know, record-breaking turnout. Yeah, looking, I think we're going to be close to 3.4 million votes cast this fall, which would top what happened in 2020. Hmm.
We will see what the future holds. J.R. Ross, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime.
J.R. Ross is the editor of WisPolitics.com and a regular WUWM contributor. As of this recording, the Wisconsin U.S. Senate race hasn't been officially called, but Democrat Tammy Baldwin is claiming victory over Republican opponent Eric Hovde. WUWM Susan Bentz is in Madison right now, where both camps gathered on election night. Susan, thank you for being here.
You bet. Good morning, Joy.
Now, can you describe what things looked like on the ground last night?
So I was on the scene as Baldwin supporters gathered at the Orpheum Theater just steps away from the Capitol. Our WUWM colleague Eddie Morales was nearby at the Hovde event. That took place at the Edgewater Hotel's Grand Ballroom. Eddie described that scene as buoyant. People were excited as they heard Trump results coming in or trickling in, of course, and they couldn't wait to hear from Hovde. Supporter Adriana Mateo said one of the reasons she voted for Hovde was out of concern for the direction the United States is taking.
I think, like many of us, he's concerned about the future for everyone. I hope that regardless of what happens, both here in Wisconsin and throughout the country, that we can remember that we're all, you know, we're all in this together and that we're going to have to be neighbors and families and friends tomorrow. So I think whoever, whether a candidate wins or not, that we can just move forward.
So, Susan, what was the mood like at the Baldwin gathering?
Well, the supporters started trickling in at about 8 p.m. when the polls closed. They watched election results as they were coming in from across the country on a huge screen on the theater stage. The mood was definitely upbeat. Carrie Kelly drove in from Milwaukee to show her support, and she describes Baldwin as someone with valued experience. As you know, Joy, if reelected, this would be Baldwin's third term as U.S. Senator, and her experience stretches back to Congress, and before that, she served as a Dane County Board Supervisor. So Kelly, her supporter, values that experience and believes Baldwin listens to the people she represents.
I have two daughters, 15 and 18, and I took my 18-year-old to vote for the very first time today, and I've always been pro-choice. I've always been huge for reproductive freedoms. Now that I have daughters who this actually really does affect. Women's health care and health care in general is probably the primary issue for me.
So reproductive rights is one of the topics Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde clashed on. Baldwin supports federal protections for abortion rights, whereas Hovde says the issue should be left to states to decide.
So, Susan, we've heard the Baldwin party ended pretty abruptly last night.
It really did, Joy. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez served as the official welcomer and told the crowd she'd be giving them updates throughout the evening. But then just after midnight, she made this announcement.
Okay, folks, we've said this from the beginning, that this race is going to be close. We are Wisconsin. This is what we are known for. But we are encouraged by what we see. Tammy is still in a strong position to win. There are hundreds of thousands of votes left to be counted, most of them early vote. It is going to be a long night, though, and we don't want to keep you here all night, so we are going to let you go home and get some sleep.
A bit after 2 a.m., not far away at his party, Eric Hovde thanked his guests, who had been waiting for him to speak, and suggested they get some sleep as votes continued to come in. Then a couple hours later, just after 4:30 Wednesday morning, Baldwin issued an email statement claiming victory in the U.S. Senate race. Baldwin's Republican opponent, Eric Hovde, just released a statement saying he is monitoring the results as they continue to get updated. One thing that is clear is that Baldwin outperformed the Democrat at the top of the ticket, Kamala Harris. She lost to Republican Donald Trump in Wisconsin.
So, Susan, before I let you go, what are the implications of the Baldwin-Hovde race for the U.S. Senate?
Well, if Baldwin is elected, she'll be in the minority in the Senate. That's because Republicans appear to have flipped the Senate by winning seats in Ohio and Montana and will now have the majority there.
All right. Well, that's WUWM reporter Susan Bentz updating us on the U.S. Senate race between Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joy.
You can stay tuned to our website where we'll be posting updates as more election results come in. Did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen on demand. Coming up, we'll hear from outgoing Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm, who didn't seek re-election. Hear his advice for the new DA in about 10 minutes. But first, we'll hear from some Wisconsin voters about what brought them out to the polls to vote in this election. That's coming up next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Yesterday's rainy weather didn't stop voters from casting their ballots, and lines were steadily moving around Wisconsin. Some voters felt excited about casting their vote for president, while others still felt conflicted about candidates Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Many stressed the importance of voting and showed up to vote with their loved ones. WUWM's Nadia Kelly, Taryn Powell, and Chuck Kornbach spoke with voters about what brought them to the polls.
My name is Angela. I'm here with my daughter, Angela. I got four other kids, 26 grandchildren, and I think at least 10 of them, I registered them 2 years ago, they started voting too. I just know my grandmother and great-grandmother, they would love to see this. Yes. I bet they couldn't even imagine this. And for me to be here to see it, you know, very special. And I just instill that in my kids, too, to let them know, like, your word means something, though. You have to say something. If you want change, want something a certain way, you have to come vote to get it, you know, get it heard. The crime is very big. Like, you know, I can remember, like, my granny, my mother, all of us sitting, like, out on the porch, you know, and kids running around playing. You really can't do that. We need to control the crimes, too. Around here. most of my neighbors, we all stick together. You know, we watch the neighborhood and stuff like that. But still 2-3 blocks over, you know, this way, that way, it's still stuff happening. But it need to get better. Because I got plenty of grandkids, and I want them to be safe, you know. I think that all the young folks now, that they really should get up and let their voice be heard. You know, you need to vote. I heard a lot of them saying, it don't matter, I ain't going to vote. Yes, it do matter.
I think it don't mean nothing, but it do.
Yeah, it's very important.
My name is Yvonne Robinson.
Miss Latasha Triplett. Yes, this is my mom.
This is my daughter. We do everything together.
It's very important that we vote as a family and we be on the same team as far as who we want in office. That it was better for us as a country, you know, better meaning of life, not overlooked, but looked at as a whole. And everything that come forth with the working and the prosperity that we deserve, I just see fit that that's the importance of us coming together as a family, voting for the right person to see over us. Voting for Miss Kamala Harris because she's all for trying to help with housing, to happen with people with us on disability, a lot of other stuff that's being met by her with schools and stuff like that, the homeless and stuff. So I just think that it's better for her as a woman to be seated and see what she brings forth, instead of all the time it's a man being in office and we don't see half of the things that they say they're gonna do.
Kim Young. The main reason, I think, the borders and cost of living. Somebody said something the other day. 5 years ago, a person went grocery shopping and they got 7 bags of groceries for like $220. That same person went grocery shopping a couple of weeks ago and got 3.5 bags for more money. So it's a big difference.
It's just him and I, but we're both retired. We're on Social Security. And so it's difficult because, you know, we only get so much and that's it, you know, and you gotta make it last for the entire month.
And for me, I think the biggest thing, and I'm not saying who or what, but they had 4 years to fix it, you know? And there's not even a dent. So it's time. It's time to make a change. And we're more independent, too. I mean,
I
it's not.
I truly am. I'm an independent. Yeah. It's who I believe in when it comes
you
time.
You can be Democratic or Republican. If you're going to make the good changes, you got my support 100%.
Well, my name is David Sykes. I voted with my mother today. So I voted for Kamala Harris, and the things that was important to me were the economy and education. So those are some of the things that I was important, reason why I voted today.
My name is Fannie Rouse, and I voted with my son, David Sykes, today. And I voted for Kamala Harris. And the issues that are important to me is a woman's right to choose and the economy. To all the young, pretty much to everybody, please come out and vote. I mean, your vote really counts. It really matters in the scheme of things and things to happen in the future.
The reason why I voted is because people, you know, our ancestors died for us to give us the right to vote. And I think this is an important election cycle, so I decided to come out and vote.
My name is Murad. I lived here for a few years, and I voted for Donald Trump. Really just closing the border. The reason why it's an issue because that brings up the cost of living. And I know a lot of people of color, my people, black people, that's losing their jobs because they're giving it to the migrants because they're cheaper. Okay. They already get seeking the benefits of like the food stamps and they don't really have to, and then a lot of them getting paid under the table. So they're not paying taxes to benefit America too as well, but they still getting paid. So I'm seeing people that I know from my area, I'm from the south side, so just saying it's hard to see that black people are losing their jobs. It's and now it's more of a competition because we usually don't be the ones they hire. It's now we have a more competition, so that's the reason why I voted for him.
Hi, my name's Pamela Foster. Well, I want to protect women's rights. We can have a felon running our government. I voted anti-crazy. I thought the last 4 years were great. I really agree with the policies on Ukraine, Israel. I know the prices are up, but I don't really think the government has a lot of control over that. I think, you know, she's level-headed, she's brilliant. I agree with the policies. It's definitely important to vote. I think it's important for young women especially to vote. You know, we can't have a king, we need a president, so.
I am Mary Edwards Butler. The economy, lower prices on food, clothing, shelter for the homeless and the unfortunate, and Medicare. Because I see a lot of people out here with nowhere to live, in food lines, trying to get food, with no eligibility, no jobs.
Are you comfortable sharing who you voted for?
The lady.
What was it about Kamala Harris that appealed to you?
Not just her being a woman, just the things that she's saying about abortions. Like, we do have rights to our own body, not the government.
My name is Vanessa Burkett. I'm here at North Division on Center to vote today. Well, I'm voting, you know, civic duty and all that, but, you know, making a change because, you know, we don't want the alternative to happen again. Kamala Harris, lifelong Democrat, kind of shaky on being a Democrat like now, but like, you know, no Trump, can't have Trump again. I didn't think he did horrible his first time around, but like learning what I learned about like him putting all these judges in office, not even the Supreme Court judges, I just found out that in his 4 years, he put like 190 something circuit judges, conservative leaning circuit judges across the United States. So like that's going hand in hand with what he trying to do when he get in again, which is like get rid of all these regulations and stuff. And that's not good. We need regulations. And they, like that's only the one thing I know. I'm pretty sure it's a whole bunch of worse stuff. So
was there any policy specifically from Kamala Harris that kind of helped you push over and
honestly, no. I mean, no. I really haven't heard any policies. Not that, you know, I've been doing a lot of research, just the commercials I see, and on them commercials and interviews I see, either one of them really talk about policies. I'm more so voting with my heart and what I think, who's going to do better and who's going to do worse. And I think Trump is going to do worse.
My name is Michael Benson. I vote for Trump. A lot with bringing jobs back to America, a lot with the abortion. I think I'm not totally 100 with the observing women that are pregnant and things like that, but also we got to start holding each other accountable. I think women play a big role, but when it comes to being equal in the United States and equal in society, they don't want it. And they say they do, but they don't. They just want the benefits, but they don't want the consequences. Men, if we don't work, we don't work. If we don't work, we don't eat. You know what I mean? We on the street, and it shows. So the husband plays a role with structuring the family, so does a woman, so does the wife.
Well, any additional thoughts you want to share just about the importance of voting or anything else important to you that you want to say?
Not to vote for identity. A lot of us do that, and we don't even like each other when it comes to the black community. We can't stand when one another gets better than the other at the time, but then when one try to help another, they don't want to listen to it. So it's a pride thing we got with each other. We do need to go back to loving each other. Church is very important. Like I say, when we start resorting back to the Word of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be fine.
That piece featuring the voices of Wisconsin voters was produced by Lake Effect's Excret Nunez. A new season of Bubbler Talk is on the way, and we need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. Milwaukee County has a new district attorney. Coming up next, we'll hear from the outgoing DA about his 17 years holding that office. That's coming up next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Kent Lovern has been elected as Milwaukee County's district attorney. He served as chief deputy to John Chisholm, who did not seek re-election this year. Chisholm has been at the helm of the office for 17 years and was an assistant DA for a dozen years before that. The district attorney prosecutes criminal offenses that occur in the county, from misdemeanors to felonies. Outgoing DA Chisholm spoke with WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell about his time in office. He begins by explaining his decision to not seek re-election.
You know, there's a lot of reasons that go into a decision to move on. And one of the biggest issues that I had to assess was, where was the office in terms of the commitments that I had made when I first ran in 2006? Did I feel like we had made substantial progress to achieving a lot of the goals that I aspired to back in 2006? Secondly, how about the stability of the office? And at this particular time, I feel like I have a really, really accomplished and experienced executive team. I've got a lot of young, very excellent prosecutors coming in and starting to excel at the practice as well. But that's been really a difficult time for really, say, the last 10 years or more, where we've really been challenged to retain people in the office because of the low wages and the conditions. And so that's another factor that weighed into it when the legislature recently adjusted the compensation for assistant DAs across the state. What we've seen since then is that the assistant DAs are staying, and they're not leaving to go into a higher paying government job or the private practice. So those are three of the factors. And I would say really the final factor is that there's a changing relationship, I would say, between the county and the city of Milwaukee and the state as a whole, in that the recent changes, for example, giving the city and the county some flexibility in how they address some of their revenue deficits, that allows greater flexibility, greater stability for both the city and the county. And that affects me in the sense that my support staff are all county funded. And so the same problems that we had with the assistant DAs, we were having with the county support staff as well, because they just weren't being adequately compensated for the really difficult work. So that's starting to stabilize as well. And so this is just a good time for me to move on and for another person to take the helm and run with it.
You mentioned one of the considerations for stepping back was seeing where the office was in terms of your early goals you set when you were first elected. What were some of those goals?
Well, the goals remain fairly consistent. And what I would describe them as, we always made a distinction in our profession how we dealt with individuals that came into the criminal justice system between those who were committing violent and harmful offenses against themselves and other people. And so we always made a clear distinction between people engaged in dangerous and violent behavior, whether it's the use of firearms, reckless driving, you know, sexually violent people, people hurting children, people who are engaging in violent domestic behavior. All of those were cases where there had to be an intervention, and the criminal justice system was an appropriate intervention for those individuals. What we also made a distinction for, however, were the large number of people that at the time were coming into the system who were dealing with other issues in addition to whatever else brought them to the criminal justice system. But that meant we had a lot of people with mental health issues. We had a lot of people that were dealing with traumatic lives themselves, who had been exposed to lots of violence, alcohol addiction. All of those factors we looked at, and we tried to develop some different pathways for those individuals, but always keeping a balance between public safety and a desire to engage with the community to make the community not just safer, but also healthier.
As you reflect on your time as the Milwaukee County District Attorney, what are you most proud of?
It's always the people. So the The reality is, in this position, I've been privileged to bring several hundred people over the last 18 years into the profession, and that's both the support staff and as assistant DAs to serve the community. And what I look for is just a good person that is actually committed to doing the job in an ethical way, doing the job in a committed and passionate way, and somebody that's going to treat the people who come to us with dignity and respect and compassion, but be appropriately firm and disciplined when that's required as well. So I'm looking for good people, and I've been privileged to work with a lot of really, really good people.
What's been the most challenging part of the job?
Well, everything is challenging. It's probably, when you look at it, at least being the district attorney of Milwaukee County is puts you in a position to make really important decisions over more people than almost any other elected position in the state. And there's a handful of other ones that you might have more influence over them. But the prosecutor's role, the district attorney's role at the end of the day, is to really focus that lens of state authority, state power, on an individual. And when you do that, you have to balance that person's civil rights, their ability to live in a free society and exercise those rights, with the need for making sure that we keep the community safe as well. So that's the job. You're balancing that all the time. And when you make a decision, the police can arrest everybody they want to arrest. At the end of the day, nobody stays in the system unless a prosecutor makes a decision to initiate formal criminal proceedings against them. And so that's a unique privilege, a unique power of the prosecutor. And it's got to be exercised with restraint. It's got to be exercised, again, in a principled way. And again, there's got to be a purpose behind it. And that purpose, ideally, should be to keep your community safe, ideally create conditions that make it healthier, and then therefore allow people to prosper in that community. So you're trying always to maintain the social compact. That's what you're doing. And when I describe that as the core function of the prosecutor is trying to maintain that social compact, that's a difficult thing to do. It really is, because people in a major urban city like Milwaukee, they come from really diverse backgrounds, experiences, all sorts of different economic circumstances. And so all of these things come together and create a dynamic that's not unique to Milwaukee, but it's on a different scale, is one way to say it. I mean, every community experiences the same thing, but the scale in Milwaukee compared to any other area or jurisdiction in Wisconsin is just much larger. So that's part of the things that you're challenged with every day, and you're trying to make the community as safe and as healthy as you possibly can.
What do you want your legacy to be?
You know, I'm always reticent to speak about legacies, because I think that this is just a fact of elected office, and that is, 1 minute you're out of the office, you will be forgotten. And that's the way it should be. In a healthy democracy, you should just move on and allow the next person up to serve and imprint their vision and idea of how the organization should run and how it should be received by the community. So ultimately it would be that I really took the job or ran for the job originally and accepted the job when I was privileged to be elected in 2006. For one major reason, and that was that I believed really, really strongly in the ethos of the office that had been created by my predecessor, by E. Michael McCann, and that was the culture within the office that really, really imprinted on each one of us that our job was, to the best of our ability, do the right thing. In other words, make sure that you didn't charge people if you couldn't prove it.
D.A. Chisholm, you said part of moving on from a position means letting the next person come up and imprint their vision on how they think things should be run. In the case of the new district attorney in Milwaukee County, that would be Kent Lovern. What advice would you give to him?
Well, first and foremost, you're absolutely right. I like to refer to Kent as an upgrade. I'm like Windows 98, and he's coming in as an upgrade. But look, Kent and I have worked together almost nonstop since I started the Firearms Enforcement Unit back in late 1999, mm-hmm. and he was one of the first assistant DAs assigned to my unit at that time. And so, we've been working very closely with one another. So, I don't really have to give him a lot of advice. I've taken a lot of advice from him over the years, and that's been incredibly valuable to me as well. But what I would say is that it is different when it's your name on every decision. It really is. And so the only practical advice I can give him is just to be prepared for basically everything being your responsibility during this time. And I know he is, and he's going to do an awesome job.
So with that being said, are there any decisions you signed off on that you think back and maybe you would have decided differently?
It's a great question. I come from the experience that I had in the military where they required you after every single mission, every operation, to step back and evaluate how you performed. And how you performed as an individual, how you performed as an organization. Did you accomplish the mission? If you didn't, why not? And what they would always emphasize is that those were not supposed to be blaming exercises. Those were supposed to be learning exercises. In other words, it was always forward-looking. You wanted to, because the work is by definition adversarial, chaotic. Oftentimes you're just dealing with the unexpected all the time. And so you have to operate on certain principles, but you have to apply those principles differently to each situation. And so I can't identify just one example of something that didn't go the way we wanted to, because quite frankly, you'll find cases every single day of the week in our courthouse that might not go the way we wanted to. You know, we win most of our cases, you know, that's great, but we don't assess ourselves on wins and losses, right? Because even a win is a loss to somebody, and so the real question is, you know, could I have done something better? And so we do that all the time, and so there isn't any one particular incident that I look back on. There's been a mix of successes, there's been a mix of partial success, partial failure, and then there's been failures. But I've been committed to learning from all of them and just trying to improve the process as we go along.
So, what are your plans for the future?
I would like to stay in the policy space. You know, I think that the criminal justice system in the United States is... There is no such thing as a criminal justice system in the United States, because there's like 3,000 plus different jurisdictions that each one of them deal with processing allegations of crime in their community a little bit different. You know, each one of them has a little bit different culture. But there are some universal principles that I think every DA's office should have. And those are some of the things that I've worked on both locally here, but also even at the national level. I would like to continue that work. I think it's really important. I don't really think the quality of justice that you receive should vary so dramatically just because of some artificial boundary, right? You know, why should you have a different experience in Waukesha County than you have in Milwaukee County? Or why should it be different if you're from Illinois? And that's isn't that one of the concerns that people have about, you know, having reproductive rights? Why should your autonomy be different in the state of Wisconsin than it is in some other state? Those are approaches that I feel pretty strongly about, that we should be making that distinction that I started with early in my career, which is, you know, let's appropriately try to stop individuals that are harming other individuals, but also let's get to some of the root causes of why people hurt other people. And let's do that by figuring out some of those fundamental problems that can exist in a community that oftentimes just go unaddressed, you know, whether that's that's gross economic disparity, whether it's lack of opportunities in education, dysfunctional school systems, you know, violence. Violence in a community is what drives bad policy. I've said that for years. And so you really have to get a handle on the violence and come up with solutions to it that aren't simply police-based strategies, right?
Well, D.A. Chisholm, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with me. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
John Chisholm is the outgoing Milwaukee County District Attorney. He spoke with WUWM race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell. Kent Lovern ran uncontested and will now take his place as Milwaukee County DA. For more election results, head to WUWM.com. And that wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of today's conversations, or if you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, you can download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll keep following the election. That's all tomorrow at noon, right here on Lake Effect, on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.